Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, throughout modern history in industrialized countries, to the extent that many people at all had an education beyond high school, the standard situation was for men to have a higher level of education and corresponding higher income than their wives. In the nuclear family, Father Knows Best was a show that was very popular in the 50s. That was its title, and that describes the norm, right? With the man working out in the world and being the breadwinner, while the wife stayed home as mother and homemaker. The GI Bill after World War II gave many more men the chance to get off the farm and get a college degree. But around the same time, many colleges and universities became co-ed, meaning that for the first time, women were allowed to achieve higher education, not as the rare exception, but increasingly as a common rule. Many women actually went to college to pursue what was then called the MRS degree. You can figure that out. And dropped out when they found the soon-to-graduate guy they wanted to marry. But as time went on, that changed. More and more women were getting degrees. Whether they made as much money in their work as men did was a different story. But the disparity in educational levels began to level off, until by the early 1970s, there were as many women getting college degrees as there were men. So the education gap disappeared. But the balance between husbands and wives in that regard has continued to shift over time. My guest today is Dr. Benjamin Goldman, an assistant professor of economics and public policy at Cornell University, who studies these trends. He'll fill us in on what we know. Dr. Goldman tells me we can call him Benny, so we will. Welcome, Benny.
Thanks, Court. Really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you on. First, why don't we talk terminology? There's a thing called homogamy, a marriage between people who are more or less equal in education. And the corresponding term that I see coming to be used is hypogamy. I guess I'm saying that right. Or women marrying down. It's kind of a crude phrase, but I don't know what the traditional relationship is called. I guess heterogamy. But what are the trends in the increase or decrease of these relationships, Benny?
Yeah, thanks, Court. So what we've seen over time is if you look at the set of Americans born around the year 1930, that was, as you pointed out, a cohort for which there were more men attending college than women. And in that cohort, it was fairly common for men with college degrees to marry women who did not go on to earn a four-year college degree. But amongst the smaller pool of college-educated women at that time, it was quite common, and the majority of them married a man with a college degree. And when we fast forward to today, we've seen some important changes in those particular outcomes where, especially for college-educated women, we now see an increased kind of prevalence of marriages between college-educated women and men who do not have college degrees.
Yeah, so that's the hypogamy part, right? So I think also that fewer men are attending college now than in the past, maybe because they see less return on investment there. Is that true? And then secondarily, what does it mean for the marriage trends we were just talking about if fewer men are actually going to college?
Absolutely. So what we see in the data is that if we again take the perspective of Americans born around 1930, at that time, overall college attendance rates, and by that I mean attending a four-year university or the set of folks who even go beyond 4 years of college, only about 15% of Americans born in that year, 1930, would go on to do that. And when we look at how that compares across the two sexes, it was about 20% of men and 10% of women. And so if you think about the marriage market from the perspective of college-educated women at that time, there were in some sense more than enough college-educated men to go around. So there was really two men for every one college-educated woman. Mm-hmm. When we come out to today, and by today I mean Americans born around the year 1980 or 1990, what you see is that more men are going to college today than they used to, but the growth rate in college attendance for women has vastly outpaced that for men. So today, there's actually about 1.5 million more women on four-year college campuses in the U.S. than men. And the way that shakes out is it's about 45 or 50% of women now go on to get 4 years of college, whereas for men, it's kind of stagnated around 40%. So it's still higher than it was 50 years ago, but the growth rate for women has been such that now there's fewer than one college-educated guy per college-educated woman compared to almost two, you know, for the cohort of Americans born around 1930.
reminds me of a term that was prevalent back in the 60s and early 70s when I was in college, geographically unavailable, meaning that someone you would like to date just lived too far away to be feasible as a dating partner. But so maybe it's kind of educationally unavailable is becoming the corresponding term, I suppose. But so, I mean, a related question then, and kind of following up on what you were just saying, Vinny, is are college-educated women getting married at the same rates as in the past? Are they staying single longer or entirely, or has the marriage rate for women with college degrees changed?
Yeah, in some sense, that's exactly what we would have expected to happen, right? So if we again start back at Americans born in 1930, what you see is about, if we look at age 45 or so, half of college-educated women had a college-educated spouse, maybe about a quarter of them would marry someone without a degree, and another quarter would end up remaining single. So from the perspective of the college-educated women who did marry, more than about two-thirds of them were married to college-educated men. And so then when we think about this trend in college attendance rates, where now today, college-educated men are in relatively short supply, in many ways, we'd expect to get exactly what you forecasted there, Court, which is college women, they tend to prefer to marry college-educated men, but it's becoming more difficult to do so because the number of college-educated women now outpaces the number of college-educated men. But putting all that aside, what we see somewhat surprisingly when you look at the data is that hardly anything has happened to marriage rates for college-educated women. And this is really true across ages, whether you include the influence of divorce and so on. What you see is at about age 45, among college women born in the 1930 cohort in the US, about 75% of those women would go on to be married at 45. Mm-hmm. And for the same college-educated women born in 1980 in the US, it's fallen, but only to about 71%. So somehow, despite the shrinking pool of college-educated men, at least in terms relative to women, college women have been able to maintain steady marriage rates.
Okay. So if you think of it in terms of college-educated women getting married at about the same rate, but there are fewer college-educated men for them to marry, then by inference, they must be more often marrying non-college-educated men, right?
That's exactly what's happened. And so my favorite way to look at this particular data point is just to simply ask, if we were to take the set of folks born in 1930, what fraction of Americans in that cohort would be at age 45 in a marriage where the wife had a college degree and the husband did not? And that was only about 2% of Americans born in that year. And it's risen by a factor of nearly 4 or 5. So now it's about 10% of Americans born in the year 1980 are going to end up in a marriage where the wife has more education than the husband. And that is a percentage that's likely to continue rising as we think about the continued growth of these gender gaps in college attendance. And so this new type of couple, if you will, where the wife has a 4-year college degree and the husband does not, used to effectively not exist. And it's becoming an increasingly important part of the marriage market in the U.S.
So it kind of turned the father knows best thing on his head, I suppose. So this, it leads in several different directions, right? So it leads also into gender disparity in earnings. Women still often earn less in the professions than their male counterparts, so that their husbands in, let's call it in the trades, might easily earn more. Women are and have always been, I think, selective in the practical way about mates. They look for somebody who'll be a strong provider and partner and father once the, let's call it the romantic intoxication fades. So when a female lawyer, let's say, looks at a choice between a guy with a, I don't know, PhD in history and one with 2 years of community college who runs his own electrical service company, for example, she might well give more points to the latter one, all else being equal between the two guys, right? So I don't know if you've studied this particular thing yourself. It might be, you know, kind of outside your field, but you are an economist. So what do you think about that? That, you know, women will look for the guy who's the stronger earner, regardless of education level.
There's a lot of logic in that story that generalizes. And so while it is the case that if we look at these couples where women or the wife has more education than her husband, you do see it is in those couples where women are more likely to be the primary earners in the house. But it's not really as much as you'd expect, I think, pointing out, you know, exactly the logic you went through there, Court. And the reason for that is because when college-educated women do marry men without college degrees, they're tending to marry the higher earning or economically well-off folks from that pool. You know, it is definitely not the case that there's, you know, a lot of women with four-year degrees who are marrying kind of men who don't have jobs or just kind of your average guy who doesn't go to college in the US. What we see in the data is that they tend to marry the higher earning non-college men when those relationships form.
Yeah, that's what you'd expect, I think. So, I mean, again, following this this logic tree we're on here, climbing into the next branch, if more college-educated women are marrying more financially successful non-college men, they're kind of skimming off the cream of that demographic crop, right? So how has that affected the marriage prospects of non-college women? Doesn't it leave them kind of out in the cold with fewer good options?
Absolutely. And so if we look at the data from the perspective of those born in 1930, among non-college women, almost 70% of them ended up married to a non-college guy. So the gross majority of marriages for non-college women were to men who did not get college degrees. And exactly as you point out, Court, kind of what has happened to that pool, both as working class men in the US have, you know, been subject to a bunch of negative trends in the labor market, socially, health and mortality, but also as college educated women are now marrying the economically well-off men from that pool. And what you see in the data is if you come up with what I'll call a very loose definition of quote unquote marriageable, which is, does the guy have earnings that are above the national median? So for much of this period, you can think earnings above something like $30,000. And is he not already taken by a college-educated woman? And from the perspective of Americans born in 1930, according to that definition, almost three quarters of non-college men kind of fit the bill. But if we go out to today among Americans born in 1980, that's fallen from almost 80% down to about 35%. So there's just been a massive shift in the marriage pool from the perspective of non-college women, both because non-college men are doing worse economically, but also because, as you mentioned, the college women are beginning to kind of erode the higher earning men in that pool.
Yeah. So it sounds like non-college educated women are kind of getting the short end of the stick here. But, you know, it occurs to me maybe, and again, I don't know if this is something you study or know about, but, you know, you're more likely to know about it than I am. Is there maybe a reverse trend then in which some college educated men are preferring less educated wives for various reasons?
Yeah. So just to conclude the prior discussion, you're absolutely right that it's, you know, the data look like non-college women are getting the short end of the stick in the sense that if we do look at their marriage rates as a consequence of these trends, they've gone from around 75% at age 45 down to nearly 50% today. So there's been almost a 25 percentage point drop in marriage rates for non-college women. And so in that sense, really the entire decline in marriage rates in the US is driven by what's going on with non-college Americans. And then when we look at college-educated men, so is this happening in reverse? Are we seeing more instances of couples where the guy has a college degree, but his wife does not? What I'll say is that that was actually always a relatively common marital arrangement going back to Americans born in 1930, and it's roughly stayed where it was. So there hasn't been, you know, a big increase, if anything, a small decrease in the share of those couples as a fraction of the total population.
Okay. Well, I guess that also brings up the question of geographic differences. I mean, in places such as small towns and rural areas where non-college men earn less, what happens to, I guess you could call it the marriage outcomes among non-college women, assuming that there are a fair number of college-educated women around to marry the higher earning non-college men. So where the non-college men aren't earning as much, maybe they're less attractive. So how does that play into this whole thing that we're talking about?
Sure. So thus far, we've been focused on these changes over time, right? And one way to summarize the story there is that as outcomes have worsened for men, and in particular, labor market outcomes for non-college men, what you see is that marriage rates are really declining for non-college women, not college-educated women. Mm-hmm. in part because college women have been able to substitute to marrying the economically well-off non-college men. Mm-hmm. But one can now approach that data rather than looking over time, say, let's just take recent cohorts, so Americans born around 1980, and ask how these patterns vary across the U.S. And what you see is almost exactly the same pattern, where it's precisely in the metro areas in the U.S. where non-college men have the worst economic outcomes, that mm-hmm. you see these just massive education gaps and marriage rates for women, where college-educated women are, you know, much more likely to be married than non-college women. If we go to the other end of the spectrum, so the few places in the U.S. where, say, nearly all non-college men are working and have stable jobs, there's actually hardly any marriage gap by education for women. So in some sense, those areas, some of which are concentrated in the upper plain states, you can think about parts of suburban Minneapolis, these areas in the U.S. almost look like America did at large in 1930 in terms of the landscape of education and marriage outcomes.
All right. So, you know, this has all been fairly heavy going, fairly complex, and I hope everybody out there is following our crawling along here through these different questions, which are all kind of interlocking. But another geographic factor that occurs to me that affects the availability of suitable male partner choices, I think, is that in cities, many young men have an aversion to early marriage. I mean, they mainly went there for career or lifestyle reasons, to make money or to enjoy life and party, and not to look for a wife. And so there's the prevalence of what used to be called, I don't know if it still is or not, the metrosexual type, who's not the marrying type. And it used to be that the ratio, when I was young, of females to males in the population was slightly more than 1-to-1, and probably is still on a birth level. But I don't know what it is in cities now, but as far as practical availability goes, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 1.5-to-1. I mean, a lot more women than men who are in the marriage market. So again, this may not be your field, but what do you think about that?
I think there's some truth to that. I mean, as one example, New York is notoriously a place where when you look at the young population, it's really skewed female. But I think mm-hmm. you're right to point out there might be parts of the story missing by just looking at that overall, you know, number of women than men who live in any one place, because not only do you need to find a match, but you also need the other side of the market to be available and kind of willing to date and settle down, as you suggest. And I think many, you know, many folks have written thoughtfully on this. One person who comes to mind is the British anthropologist Louise Perry, who talks about some of the dynamics in these areas where women outnumber men, where for men, you know, especially men who use app-based dating technologies and so on, it's pretty mm-hmm. easy to get matches quickly and find people to go out with and so on. But this can create weird dynamics where there's not necessarily a ton of incentive for the male side of the market, especially if you're one of the high status folks who has a good job and who is in general desirable. You know, why stop in a sense? Why settle down? And yeah. I think this can lead to a lot of frustration in dating for young people.
Yeah, so cities aren't a healthy place for women in general to look for a husband compared to some kinds of rural areas, I guess. But that probably varies all over the map from individual to individual and from place to place. Well, you're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're wading our way through a topic of what I guess you could call marriage equality or marriage inequality. And we're talking with Dr. Benjamin Goldman, Benny Goldman, who's a professor of economics and public policy at Cornell University about this thorny subject. And so I guess this also comes into the big question of education versus earnings, right? I kind of alluded to that in the introduction, that there's not a one-to-one correspondence between education and earnings, either for women in general or in general for the whole population. I mean, obviously someone with an MD or someone with a law degree is usually going to earn more than someone with a PhD in philosophy. So the type of education is a factor that can't be ignored in this discussion, right? We're not just talking about education in general, but it's the particular field you're in. And someone who's a licensed plumber with a GED, you know, just a high school diploma, might make more than a teacher with a master's degree, for example, and may well do so, right? So I don't know, my wife was the director of what used to be called vocational education and was later termed career and technical education, in a large school district with a NASA center, an Air Force base, and a cluster of big high-tech companies. and her programs were generally looked down on by her counterparts in the academic areas. But graduates of her programs, for example, in auto mechanics or aeronautics technology or computer programming, might be making $90,000 to $100,000 a year 5 years after graduating, while graduates of the other programs, the academic programs, might be in college racking up student debt in preparation for working for peanuts in some government or nonprofit organization, let's say. So a lot of women look at that and think the choice of spouse is a no-brainer. And again, I don't know if you've researched this particular question, but as an economist, do you think it's a big factor?
I think there's a lot there. I think you're certainly right that folks who go through what used to be called vocational training or what now is called career and technical training can go on to do very well for themselves. And I think in many ways, it's those folks who are, you know, contributing to this trend where we see college educated women who might, you know, have a 4-year degree and gone on to be a nurse, marrying someone who's a, you know, technician at a local NASA plant or a mechanic of sorts or an electrician. I think those are really the types of couples who are driving this trend of college-educated women marrying non-college men. But I think it's, you know, worth not pushing that too far in the sense there are still really broad differences on average in earnings between college-educated and non-college Americans. And so, you know, if you have a 4-year college degree, you're going on to earn much more on average than non-college Americans. And that's actually been one of the key drivers in income inequality and the increase in income inequality since the 1980s is this divergence in earnings between college and non-college Americans. So I think both are true. That's a statement about the average, but there also is a, you know, large pool of non-college Americans who go on to do very well for themselves, as you're pointing out.
Yeah. Well, the article in The Atlantic magazine that I read and where you were quoted about your research findings talked about the effect of these trends on male pride, which is a different thing, more in the psychology and sociology side of things, I guess, and it might not be your area once again, but it seems to me that it's less of a driver than in the past, this kind of marriage balance thing. And for example, when we lived in Florida, my dentist was a young woman who married her personal trainer. He was a virile, confident guy who became the classic stay-at-home dad who raised the kids. And they seemed to get along fine. I mean, it was like, you know, a really great relationship. And I think 60, 70 years ago, that would have been a really weird relationship, but it wasn't for them. And you're also a political scientist. And I guess you could call this, I don't know, gender politics or something, but is there still a stigma against the woman being more educated than the man, especially if she's also higher earning than the man? Is that a problem for people? Is it a social issue they have to deal with?
It's a good question. And I think in many ways, we have a lot to learn about this topic, in part because there hardly used to be any couples in the US where this was true, especially if we, you know, look back 40 or 50 years to an era where it was, you know, less common for women to work, especially if after they had had children, right? And so it's really a new dynamic. And I think we have a lot to learn from the set of couples who are in these arrangements, exactly like the dentist you had mentioned, right? We now have, for the cohort born today, it's possible that something like a quarter or a third of all marriages will fit this bill of the wife has more education than the husband. Hmm. And so what do gender dynamics look like in that household? Who is spending more of their time on housework, helping out with children, and so on? Sure. My view is it's really an open question. I think the data we have so far suggests that at least in recent years, the divorce rates amongst these types of couples are no higher than other types of couples. But, you know, the key question will be how that evolves as this becomes a more common feature of marriages in the U.S.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, I was going to ask you if there's a correlation that anybody can see between hypogamy, this imbalanced thing with the woman having more education than the man, and divorce. But maybe you're saying it's too soon to know.
Yeah, there was a correlation going back a few decades, but it's more or less gone away, where at this point, divorce rates look pretty similar across these different types of couples.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if this differs from country to country and culture to culture? I mean, is it the same in Europe, the same in Asia? Do you know?
My sense is the trends look broadly similar in much of Europe, although I think there have not been necessarily a comprehensive set of studies looking beyond the Europe and the US. So I want to provide a little caution before overinterpreting.
Yeah. So what do you see as the future for these trends yourself? And, you know, we've got a few minutes here. So, like, you know, just kind of speculate if you can.
Yeah, so my view is that a lot is going to rest on what happens to outcomes of especially lower income or working class men in terms of education. So that discussion we began with about how have college attendance rates evolved for men and women, it went from there being about two men per woman in college back in the 1930 cohort. Now it's under one. What is going to happen to that moving forward? Might we soon reach a place where there's nearly two women for every guy on college campuses in the US? My view is that as we continue to trend in that direction, it's plausible that we're going to continue to see these widening education gaps in marriage, where college-educated women could continually eat into the non-college male pool, especially the higher earning men in that pool. Mm-hmm. And non-college women will kind of be, you know, struggling to find partners. And in fact, when you look at the data, there's some early signs of this. So one thing we can do is rather than look at marriage rates out at age 45, we can try and forecast what that might look like based on relationship data. Do you have a cohabiting partner? Are you already married earlier in life? What you see when you do that is the continuation of these trends out through Americans born through the mid-90s, where it looks to be the case that marriage rates are likely to remain stable for college-educated women, yet continue to fall for non-college women. So I expect around the 1995 birth cohort to be the first birth cohort for which marriage rates for non-college women actually fall below 50%. So fewer than one in two non-college women in that cohort will be married around age 45. One takeaway of these data for me is there's a lot of discussion, I think, in the media about how men struggling both in education and also growing political divergence between men and women has made it difficult for highly educated or career-focused women to find a partner. And I think there's probably a lot of that narrative that's true and relates to real experiences folks are having and dating and trying to find a match with someone. But on the other hand, I think it's important not to let that draw away from these broader trends where it's really working class Americans where family structure has declined in the past 50 years, not so much at the top of the education distribution. You know, women who go on to get PhDs from fancy schools or, you know, attend elite colleges, those are the folks really still getting married at very high rates. And so I think for thinking about and discussing this problem, it's important to focus on this class element of it, this non-college element of it. And I find that that's often missed in discussions of this topic.
Yeah, and I guess what happens with the economy is an unknown that could throw a monkey wrench into this whole balance that we've been talking about in unknown ways. So,
well, good thing there's no news on that front. All quiet on the Western front in our present day.
Yeah, that's true. Everything's very stable. Well, we could talk a little bit more about this, but I think it's been a pretty dense discussion in the sense that there's a lot of information we've packed into this, Benny. And again, Dr. Benjamin Goldman, I want to thank you for being on with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Court. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and speak with your listeners.
Yep, and it has been interesting. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place for more American Variety Radio.